I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, a win for common sense as SCOTUS rules that states can, in fact, protect girls' sports. Plus, a trans mob is roaming a Seattle park assaulting people. And Pennsylvania gives an example of what it looks like to put country over party. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. The day we've been waiting for has arrived, a historic ruling from SCOTUS that means that Title IX in the United States will continue to mean something for states who choose to protect girls' sports and women's sports. So of course, we've been waiting for days now for a ruling in two key cases that were being kind of decided together. The state of West Virginia versus BPJ and Bradley Little, the governor of Idaho, versus Lindsey Hecox. And these both had to do with states that had policies that protected girls' sports. So it said that no, biological boys cannot compete against girls in sports in our states. And there's a couple dozen states that have those policies on the books. So unlike Washington, which says, yes, they can. So the cases were really about whether it was okay for states to have that ban, have that interpretation of Title IX to say, no, boys can't compete against girls. And SCOTUS in a 6-3 decision ruling that, yes, those states can continue to ban biological boys from competing in girls' sports. Here's the majority ruling written by Brett Kavanaugh. It says the two states here, along with 25 other states, as well as the IOC and the NCAA, have concluded at this time that women and girls should be allowed to compete for life-changing opportunities on an equal playing field without fear of physical injury from biological males or being forced to compete against biological males. Consistent with Title IX and the Equal Protection Clause, we hold that the states may maintain women's and girls' sports for biological females. They may determine eligibility for women's and girls' sports based on biological sex. The Constitution and Title IX do not require an overhaul of women and girls' sports throughout America. So I'm very happy to hear this, obviously. It doesn't impact the state of Washington because we don't ban boys from competing in girls' sports. But I did also express some concern that if voters here, which I hope they will, pass the amendment that allows, that does that when Democrats won't and protects girls' sports, had SCOTUS ruled differently and said states can't do that, then we'd be in trouble. Then the initiative would kind of mean nothing, right? And so it's going to be up to voters in our state to try to do this and do what other states have done. I got to say, the dissent pissed me off. The dissent pissed me off because I just struggle with women trying to destroy women's rights. And you've got Brett freaking Kavanaugh, who's writing the opinion defending women and girls. And then you've got Sotomayor and Ketanji Brown Jackson writing the dissent. And here's what they said. This litigation implicates deeply sensitive, contentious, and evolving issues. These circumstances demand exercising judicial restraint, not rushing to answer conclusively difficult questions without sufficient evidentiary development. In opting otherwise, the majority extends great sympathy to those it favors, the young cisgender girls and women who play sports. It says, I share that sympathy. Playing sports can lead to benefits that are immeasurable, and many are understandably invested in ensuring that competition stays fair and safe. Because the majority, however, inflicts a hardship on those it disfavors without giving them the fair and full opportunity the Constitution requires to litigate their contentions, I respectfully dissent. That line drives me nuts. The majority extends great sympathy to those it favors, the young cisgender girls and women who play sports. And in this legal sense, great sympathy, you know, in terms of it's taking the law and weighing it in a way that favors girls, drives me nuts. Because what you're doing and what states like Washington are doing, they have a law that disfavors girls. They have a law that seeks to protect a minority of people that have a biological advantage against girls. And nobody complains and worries in Washington state, the Democrats. Well, doesn't this, you know, we're trying to protect trans kids, But doesn't it, what is their wording, give them, extend great sympathy to the trans kids in a way that disfavors and hurts women and girls? And the answer, of course, has to be yes. There's a reason why a disproportionate number of trans athletes like win state championships in Washington. It's because they're boys. And I get it that this, I don't have a perfect solution to this. I don't. That balances everyone's rights fairly. But again, it's about equal rights under the law, equal treatment under the law. And that's not what's happening right now. Trans athletes in states like Washington are getting special treatment under the law, special rights under the law. And so, you know, I think the only fair sort of resolution to all of this is to have a third category and let trans people or gender diverse people compete against each other. I don't know. Or, I mean, if I'm being honest, what's really fair is saying, no, you're a boy, compete against the boys. Because you have the strength of a boy, you have the biology of a boy, so you compete against the boys. But I will say, this is such an uphill battle still. Because while the states that have common sense leadership get to continue to protect girls' sports, as Democrats wanted to do 20 years ago with Title IX, that was literally the point of Title IX, is to make sure that women and girls had fair play. And now they're like, no, no, we want to take this out of biological boys. But just look at some of the headlines covering this ruling. ESPN, Supreme Court upholds state laws banning transgender athletes. No, no, no. Transgender athletes can continue to play. They just can't play against girls. It doesn't ban them from participating. ABC News. Supreme Court upholds state bans on transgender girls in girls sports. No, no, boys and girls sports. And I get it. They call themselves transgender girls, but this is a conscious decision not to call them biological boys. Courthouse News. Supreme Court sides with GOP states on anti-trans sports ban. No, it's not about being anti any group of people. It never has been. You won't find a single clip on this show of me arguing this issue in a way that's against trans kids. No, it's about bad decisions that adults have made that have led to unfair outcomes. It's not anti-trans. It's pro-science. It's pro-common sense. It's pro-reality. And this is the Seattle Times headline. And again, at a time, by the way, at a time when we have an initiative that is going to go to voters in a matter of months. And the Seattle Times freaking knows that. Their headline, Supreme Court upholds state laws banning transgender girls and women from school athletic teams. It does not ban them from school athletic teams. It bans them from girls' teams. They can still play sports. They can still compete. They have to compete against people who match their biology. Again, it was the whole point of Title IX. It's not hateful. It's not bigoted. It's just the truth. And the truth is neither nice nor mean. The truth is just the truth. Democrats knew it 20 years ago, but somewhere along the way, they got so ideologically captured that they were more than willing to throw women and girls under the bus for a different contingency that they think is a better voting block for them, apparently. But it's so hard when you've got the media, and then you look at the media stories, legacy media, really, and the people who they lift up, and the people, sometimes it's about choices, right? It's about editorial decision-making, not necessarily about just unfair coverage, but it's about what they choose to cover and what they choose not to cover. Like CNN has done a number of sympathetic stories about the biological boy at the center of one of these cases that SCOTUS just ruled on. This high school sophomore is aiming for Supreme Court upset in transgender sports case, and it just has a nice picture of this biological boy, you know, looking in a dress, looking feminine and innocent. And again, it's not about this sophomore kid. But even in some of the CNN and national articles, painted Pepper is their name, as a mediocre athlete. Pepper just won a state title. Mediocre maybe if playing with boys, but a state champion when playing with girls. And so you don't see CNN doing like these puff profile pieces on young girls who've lost to Pepper, who've lost to biological boys. You don't see some sad sympathy piece on the biological girls who are losing. Why don't they matter? Why doesn't it matter to at least be fair and say, hey, we're going to profile this young trans athlete So let's also profile maybe one or two of the girls who he just beat in the state championship. That would be fair, wouldn't it? The Seattle Times is doing the same thing. You have that trans track athlete in the state of Washington. What if they won 3 or 4 state titles? And every time the Seattle Times does a glowing profile with a picture of them and paints them as some like champion, like a martyr. And again, I'm not saying you have to vilify them. These are adult decisions, and that boy is playing by the rules that they're allowed to play by. But why don't you do, Seattle Times, a puff piece, a sympathy piece, a piece making the girls who have been speaking out for their rights look like champions, look like, you know, saviors. I can connect you with them. I can get you a dozen young girls in the state of Washington, Seattle Times, who would be more than happy, and CNN, who'd be more than happy to sit down with you if you're going to be fair, if you're going to profile them like you've profiled the trans athlete, and talk to you about what this has done to them, what it means to them to participate, what it means to them for some of them to have the opportunity to be a state champion. But some of them will never, who've had the misfortune of being in the same category, same age, as in that this case, this trans boy who keeps smoking them in track, they'll meet him at every state title until they graduate. They'll have to compete against them at every state meet until they graduate, and they will never have a chance to win. They could be the best girl in the state. They will never have a chance to win that trophy. So I'm all, by all means, let's care and be sympathetic towards these kids who are gender confused. And I think they should get to compete in athletics like every other child in the sport that matches their biology. So it's not about being hateful. It's just about the truth. And we're going to be dealing with, you know, the media's horrible coverage of this issue straight through till November. And that is a challenging thing to fight against. You know, you already have the ACLU of Washington, the Washington Education Association, the Gender Justice League. They're spending millions of dollars through No Hate in Washington State to try to paint what used to be an accepted, like, fight for women and girls' rights and fairness as this effort at bigotry to roll the clock backwards. And some of the ads are already coming out. This is an attack ad on Brian Haywood. This is the man behind the girls' sex testing initiative. Brian Haywood is a far-right mega millionaire and the founder of Let's Go Washington, the group behind several statewide initiatives, including efforts to repeal Washington's capital gains tax. And then it highlights and takes out of context some aspects of the initiative. And it's just from communities, allies for queer equity. But they're going to be, you know, they're going to paint him as like a pervert who wants to look at kids' genitals. Remember, because they can't go, they're not going to argue that boys should play against girls because that's a losing argument. They're going to argue that the way the initiative is written is going to require girls to show their genitals to random adults, which is just crazy. But they're going to spend millions of dollars to do it. And then they'll get all the free publicity from the press that will continue to share the sad stories of these trans athletes, but not the struggles of the girls. I'm not asking for unfair coverage. I'm not asking for you to elevate the girls. I'm asking you for you to do both. And for you to be honest that these girls aren't filled with hate. They just want what girls were promised more than 20 years ago by Democrats. Fair play, an even playing field. And the only way you can accomplish that is if they're playing against other girls. All right, I broke some news of this over the weekend, and I didn't cover it on the show yesterday because there was still more stuff happening, and I wanted to try to get a hold of all of it and make sense of it. There is a mob of transgender homeless people that is roaming Cal Anderson Park in Seattle, the site of the former autonomous zone, and they are attacking people, mostly people who they think are conservatives or enemy of their transgender identity. No, this isn't a conspiracy theory. This is all caught on video. Police have made several arrests, but this is absolutely crazy and something that I think the federal government needs to get involved with. And part of it has something to do with this show. So you'll remember Ari, who's a detransitioner. Ari is a boy, was convinced at some point in their late teens that they should transition to be a girl. Ari deeply regrets it. came on the show to talk about it. And so Ari has become a pretty vocal detransitioner. So pretty vocal against, you know, the medicalization of children, for instance. So Ari had another well-known detransitioner that was visiting Seattle. Their name is Hendrix. And so Hendrix is the opposite. Hendrix is a biological girl who was convinced to try to transition to be a boy, but now is like, I'm a detransitioner. All of that was crazy. So you've got these two very high-profile detransitioners. Ari was wearing the hat that Ari always wears, which is a hat we gave him. It says, it's a red hat. Some of you own it. It says, make common sense great again. And it's red. And from a distance, yeah, it looks like a MAGA hat, right? So Ari and Hendrix go up to the gay neighborhood. I mean, they're both gay. They should have a right to feel safe. Anyone should, but in Cal Anderson Park. And they decide to take a break, sit on a park bench in Cal Anderson Park, and they're recording a video of themselves. So taking a selfie. Here's that video.
Her name.
Huh?
Her name.
Her Isn't name? That the IKEA chart?
What's her name?
Bonhai.
Her name is that's Bonhai. Pointing at me. It's not pointing at you.
Oh, we're recording ourselves.
Yeah, it's okay, pointing at us.
Like, we're good. Thank you.
So they're sitting there on the park bench. They're recording a video, and all of a sudden, this sort of group of mostly trans people approach them, and they think that Ari and Hendrix are recording them, is what they claim. And they say, no, like, we're recording ourselves, no big deal, and Ari's got this hat on, right? So that's when one of the individuals in this sort of mob roaming the park comes up and pours water on Hendrix's head. And here's what ensues. So you'll see there in the distance. So Hendrix gets up to defend herself. The person in the plaid puts Hendrix in a chokehold. That's when a trans person comes around and is punching Hendrix in the face while another individual pepper sprays her in the face. Throws her to the ground. Can we play that video one more time? Because I want to make sure everybody sees it. So you see the moment, defends herself, and then is rendered defenseless, put in a headlock, punched by that trans person, while another individual pepper sprays her in the face repeatedly, that person in the red pants. So Hendrix was left with a black eye from that ordeal, being held in a chokehold. And because they're just minding their business on a park bench, right? And these people approach them. You'll find out that it might not have been about the accusation that you're recording us. It was more so about the hat that Ari was wearing, because they get up. You know, Ari collects Hendrix. They get up and try to walk away, and Ari is recording himself. And here's what happens.
Come on, let's go. That's what happens.
Take the hat off.
There.
A lot of swearing, I apologize.
Give me my fucking hat, you fucking scumbag. Give me my fucking hat. Leave me the fucking
hat.
The fuck alone. Leave me alone. Hey, you need to stop. You need to stop, sir. You people need to stop. Right now.
You
need to stop.
You punch me in the fucking
You need to fucking stop, sir. You need to fucking stop.
You fucking dumbass.
You hear that? You came in a park with a red effing hat. You came in a park with a red effing hat. And I've reviewed a lot of video from different angles. And there's this other video where someone's shouting at them as Hendrix is being beaten on the ground. Are you happy? What did you think was going to happen? You're wearing a red hat. So they spotted these two individuals, detransitioners, because of a red hat that's not even a Trump hat, decided to beat them, hold one of them in a chokehold, punch them, pepper spray them. Here's police were called by multiple witnesses. Police arrived. Here's their conversation with Ari.
They assaulted both of us together.
Assaulted both of you guys?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Do you mind sitting here so I can talk to you?
We're a group, absolutely.
Okay, absolutely. I need a pepper spray too. Did you get pepper sprayed?
Yes, sir.
You did?
My mouth and my eyes are killing me.
No, pepper spray.
No, I got pepper sprayed.
You might have a seat.
I didn't touch anybody. We just sat down at the park to have a smoke. Our car's over there. We were just pausing to have a vape on the nicotine vape. And they saw my hat, which says Make Common Sense Great Again. It's
make
a brand.
Again?
Make Common Sense Great Again. It's a Brandy Cruz hat for a podcast. And they came and started getting in her face and attacking her. And
who's her? What do you refer to?
Hendrix. She's a D-trans lady.
The one with the gold necklace?
Yeah, the one who got maced. She got maced like several repeatedly. They chased her around, macing her. We sat down at the bench over there for a smoke, and then like I tried to tell, hey, this is violence, like you need to back off. This needs to be de-escalated, like we need to stop. I was recording myself. I wasn't pointing at the situation. I was talking to them. Sometimes I was pointing at the situation, but I couldn't flip it mid-recording. Yeah. She got maced hard. Her phone got stolen. My glasses got stolen. They surrounded me on the ground. I almost drew my gun. I had my hand on it. My knees dash. Shit. No, sir. I don't see my glasses anywhere.
Honestly, a lot of restraint from Ari not to pull his gun. And he was worried about escalating the situation. And you could see he tried to walk away. They came up, ripped the hat off his head, beat him to the ground, started pepper spraying again. So police were able to make one arrest. They responded. Here's the picture of the individual that they arrested. They found the person who did the pepper spraying. And I mentioned, you know, most of the group was transgender. I don't know if this suspect is or not, but I will say I reached out to police. They confirmed that this guy was arrested. But here's kind of the kicker. So the guy talks to police, you know, and says that he did meth 2 hours before this all happened. But he didn't even get booked into the King County Jail. Police take him to the King County Jail. And the jail, and all of this gets so much crazier, you guys. This is such a tale, okay? The feds need to get involved. The jail, he goes to the jail and says, I was sexually assaulted. Because all the criminals know, if you say there's some sort of medical issue or something like that, the jail won't take you because it's a liability issue. They've had too many people die there. So the jail won't book him. So police have to take him to Harborview. Gets to Harborview, and he won't, like, cooperate with any sort of, like, sexual assault. He just made this up. It's just made up. Wouldn't cooperate with police. So like, okay, well, if you were sexually assaulted, we'll investigate the sexual assault. Wouldn't do anything, so they cut him loose. Cut them loose. So if this, before we get to what happened after this, imagine if the roles were reversed. So you've got two detransitioners, one wearing what looks like a Make America Great Again hat, that are attacked by a mostly transgender mob in the gay neighborhood in Seattle, okay? Imagine the roles are reversed. You've got a group of conservative detransitioners who go up for no reason and attack two transgender people sitting on a bench in the neighborhood, in the gay neighborhood in Seattle. It would lead every single newscast in the city for days. It would immediately be a felony hate crime. Immediately. But because it's the trans people doing the attacking on two conservative detransitioners, not only is it not a felony hate crime, one of the guys, the only person they were able to catch, isn't even booked into jail. Not a single news outlet has covered it. This has been out for 5 days. Not a single news outlet has covered it. So this gets crazier. So Bennett Hasselton is a guy who's, I don't know how to describe Bennett. Bennett is like an activist. He shows up at some things. He's on the left. He's like an activist slash independent content creator. Here are two pictures that Bennett took of himself the day after the attack on Ari and Hendrix in Cal Anderson Park. So Bennett says that he decided after seeing what happened to them, he goes, I went back the day after Ari and Hendrix were attacked to take pictures and videos and see if I could find anything. I didn't take my body camera because I didn't think anything would happen. And then a couple people recognized me as the guy they're frequently mad at because I asked them once to stop chanting Long Live October 7th. They started pushing me out of the park and called in reinforcements on the phone. And when enough people arrived, they grabbed my phone out of my hand, put me in a headlock, and pepper sprayed and punched me. Sound familiar? Here's Bennett on video saying what happened.
I was attacked earlier tonight by a group of militants at Cal Anderson Park in Seattle who put me in a headlock and pepper sprayed me in the face and punched me in the face a couple of times and stole my phone. I have a couple small bruises and my eyes and my skin were a lot redder a couple of hours ago.
So he goes as a content creator to Cal Anderson, scene of the crime, was also looking because the trans mob stole some things from Ari. I think they stole a phone and knocked Ari's glasses off his face. So he was like being helpful, trying to document the situation and find those things. And since he's sort of this high profile content creator who you know, Antifa has attacked before, even though he's on the left. All of a sudden, the same mob that is apparently living in Cal Anderson Park, mostly transgender people, does the same thing to him that they did to Hendrix the night before, put him in a chokehold, repeatedly punched him and pepper sprayed him in the face. He called the Seattle Police Department. I have a report number. The Seattle Police Department is allegedly investigating that incident. But that's, and I asked him, I said, were they all trans or just some of them? Here's what he told me. And keep in mind, this is not some guy on the right. He said, well, I didn't have time to ask everyone, but one of them said they were because they were saying tranny. And I told them that was a slur. And they said it was okay because they were transgender. You guys, there is a gang of transgender people living in Cal Anderson Park, assaulting people repeatedly. It doesn't end there. So during the Pride festivities over the weekend, there was a group of conservative sort of live streamers. And look, should the conservative live streamers be out live streaming in the middle of, you know, the gay neighborhood during Pride? Like, are they asking for it? Well, I think that they're asking for some people to be upset by it. But words aren't violence. And normal people, if they see someone who's saying something they disagree with, what do? You just walk away. You certainly don't do this. A guy in a skirt, watch it again in slow motion. Guy in a skirt with a bat, right in front. Can you play it again? Look at the cops are right freaking there. Oh my gosh. Guy in a skirt to these conservative live streamers comes up, hits them with a bat. Thankfully, the one guy has it blocked by his tripod. So our friend Andy Ngo has identified the attacker as Hunter Marcus Hancock. It says the masked violent Antifa terrorist who launched a bat attack on videographers at the Seattle Pride event is 39-year-old Hunter Marcus Hancock. He was arrested by Seattle police for assault. He makes Antifa pro-terrorism propaganda that calls for killings, destruction, and insurrection. For instance, this is a graphic he posted. The only good cop is a dead cop with a cop, you know, skull of a cop, ACAB, and the Antifa logo. What do you want to bet that this guy is part of that trans mob that is what? Roaming the streets of Seattle at will, assaulting people who they deem conservatives or who they deem the enemy? Feds have to take this. The feds have to take this. We got Seattle police. They can't even get the guy booked into jail for an assault that's on camera. And why isn't this a hate crime? Why, if the roles were reversed, it would be a hate crime. If those conservative streamers had taken a bat to the guy in a skirt during the Pride parade? Again, front page of the Seattle Times, lead story on King 5 News. They'd be talking about it still. The mayor would have press conferences about it. But you can, as a trans mob, roam the streets and assault people who you think are wearing a MAGA hat and who you think are conservative or helping the conservatives, and nothing really is going to happen to you? And I do want to say, Ari and Hendrix, the detransitioners who were attacked, they said the police were great. Police showed up, you know, took their reports, made an arrest of the person they could find. It's not the police department's fault that the freaking jail won't book them. And there's only so much the police can do. The federal government needs to take it. The Department of Justice needs to go down. I have heard from police sources that they're aware of this homeless mob of trans people in the park and that they have stashes of weapons hidden around the park, including buried in the ground. This stuff is absolutely wild, dangerous, incredibly dangerous faction, and the media won't pay attention to it because they're transgender. They'd pay attention to it under any other circumstances. All right, coming up next, I've got some good news for everyone. Great news. Daryl, would you like to hear my good news?
Yeah, what is it?
Tomorrow.
Okay.
Gas prices are going up.
Oh, good.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? Just in time for my birthday. I'm very excited about it. We'll discuss. First, if you are thinking about selling your home, moving to somewhere where gas prices aren't going up tomorrow, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. He gets so many great reviews from folks, including Jim H., who said, we packed our bags, hit the road to a new state, but we jump at the chance to work with Wes again in a heartbeat. And he even said that their long distance move, like they already moved and then had to sell their house. He said Wes made it a breezy walk in the park. That doesn't, who says that? Well, it's because Wes is so good at his job and he wants to make sure that, you know, you're as involved in the process as you want to be. But at the end of the day, it's all about getting the best results for his clients and just making sure that it's as stress-free as selling your home can possibly be. So go from Sell With Wes to Sold With Wes. Go to his website, peruse some of his recent listings. But I recommend just reaching out to Wes and getting a market analysis, because there's a lot of homes going on the market, not as many people moving into the state to buy them. And so it definitely changes the strategy. And Wes can talk you through all of that. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right. Just in time for the 4th of July weekend, gas prices are going up in Washington State. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. All right, we're number three. We're number three. We were number one, and we've been number two. We're number three, so I'll take that for today. Washington gas prices right now, on average, according to AAA, $5.16 a gallon. We are a little lower than California and Hawaii. The national average, $3.85 a gallon. So it's going to cost you about $40 more in Washington State on average than elsewhere in the country. And certainly there are some places that are far lower than that. And the price is about to go up effective tomorrow, because remember, during the legislative session, they raised the gas tax on top of everything else that's going on that contributes to our very high cost of fuel here. And yes, the situation in Iran has made it even worse, but the CCA, and then we have immensely massive gas taxes here. This from Como News. Washington's gas tax rises 2% on July 1st to 56.5 cents per gallon. So it'll go from 55.4 cents to 56.5 cents. It says, with all other fees included, the average state charge comes to about 59 cents a gallon. After adding the federal gas tax on top of the new state rate, drivers will pay about 77.4 cents extra per gallon each time they fill up. And that, of course, is just the gas tax side of it. And it is one of the reasons why our state, California, have such consistently higher fuel rates than the rest of the country. But what's the other reason? The failed Climate Commitment Act. So, as you know, the second the Climate Commitment Act went into effect several years ago, gas immediately shot up. Everyone knew that the Climate Commitment Act, which basically takes these polluters have to buy auctions at market to be able to, like, carbon credits, and then they pass the cost of buying those credits on to people at the gas pump. So we all knew that the CCA would increase gas prices, but boy, did they do a good job lying about it. Now, something that former Governor Jay Inslee had always called for when the CCA went into effect and gas prices shut up, you know, he'd never acknowledged that it was the result of the CCA, but they wanted to link our carbon market to California and Quebec that already has similar auctions. And they just did that a couple days ago. So Washington, California, Quebec signed carbon market agreement, setting the stage for historic climate partnership. So their thought process here, I guess, is we've all got these carbon auctions. Why don't we just make it kind of one auction, so to speak, and they believe that will drive the cost down of having to buy these carbon credits and then maybe therefore drive the resulting increase in fuel prices up. But I'll tell you why they're really doing it. Bob Ferguson, he'll tell you why this deal is really important. Here you go.
To illustrate as one example of the significance of linking our carbon markets, the Seattle Times editorial board recently called it, quote, a giant leap when considering the abandonment of climate leadership during Donald Trump's second presidency.
Ah, they're doing it because Trump bad. Got it. Okay. Governor Inslee had been trying to get, like, the CCA in the books for years. It had nothing to do with Donald Trump. But they've got to justify all these weird things they do that don't actually do anything for the environment. They've got to justify it somehow. So they're justifying it because Donald Trump bad. But the key question is this. So with this new agreement, costs, you know, through the roof right now because of Iran, because of the gas taxes going up. So a question posed to the governor and those gathered was, okay, when you link these markets, can you tell us the impact that will have on gas prices?
What's the current calculation for Washington and Quebec, plus Quebec and California, in the increases in their pump prices due to their cap and trade programs? And how much does the, what's the estimate for how much this agreement
spit it out, John,
would bring those prices down?
Does anybody want to take that one on?
I can give a non-answer.
Thank you, John.
Well, hold on. Did you hear that? That's Joe Fitzgibbon, State Rep. Joe Fitzgibbon, who's one of the Democratic leaders in Olympia. And John asks him slowly, but it's a legitimate question, which is, okay, what is this going to do to gas prices then? Because that was sort of one of the reasons you pitched us on doing this linkage, right? And Joe Fitzgibbon comes up and says, oh, I can give a non-answer. They care so little for you. They have so little respect for you. I mean, that is the key question that every Washingtonian wants answered. And Joe Fitzgibbon, oh, I can give you a non-answer. And they all sort of laugh. Let's listen to his non-answer, shall we?
I can give a non-answer.
Yep. Yeah.
Thank you, John. So as we've extensively discussed since the passage of the program, right, there are compliance costs that the Climate Commitment Act imposes on fuel suppliers. And then it's up to them how much of those costs they choose to pass on to people at the pump, right?
Wait a second. Okay, we all know that to be true. We've known it since the beginning, but I don't know that I've ever seen a Democrat in Olympia acknowledge that there are compliance costs. I mean, they've literally never acknowledged that the CCA directly leads to higher gas prices. And there's Joe Fitzgibbon. You know, now that Jay Inslee's out of office and now they have a comfortable majority, he's like, oh, yeah, I mean, there's compliance costs. Of course they are. We were called like liars for saying this. It's like there's compliance costs and it's really up to them. It's not our fault. It's up to them how much they want to pass on to consumers. I mean, we went 2-3 years with Governor Jay Inslee saying, what about gas prices in the CCA?
At what point are you going to tell the people of Washington State that they're going to possibly see much higher gas prices next year because of the CO2 emissions tax?
That's not true. They are not going to see much higher gas prices, maybe even lower than they are today. This is going to have minimal impact, if any, pennies. We're talking about pennies, potentially.
I mean, we all knew it was the biggest lie of all time when he was telling it. We all knew that, but now so casually. For Joe Fitzgibbon to say, I'll give you a non-answer. Yeah, of course there's compliance costs. But if they pass those costs along to you, that's not our fault. I mean, it's outrageous. So then he continues with his non-answer about how will this linkage reduce gas prices, if at all.
We don't know with precision where the clearance price for the joint auction is going to settle once California, Quebec, and Washington are all administering joint auctions. In general, the joint California-Quebec market has had lower auction prices, lower allowance prices than the Washington market.
Huh.
So our expectation is that it will bring down allowance prices for those 96 covered entities, including fuel distributors in our state. But we don't want to predict that with precision because this is for a market to decide. It's the whole structure of the program is that the supply and demand of these allowances will settle that. But in general, my expectation is that allowance prices will be lower once we have a linked market than they have been.
So first of all, Joe Fitzgibbon suddenly in favor of free markets all of a sudden. Oh, the market will decide. Gee, let's apply that to some other policies that you've pushed through. But his short answer is we don't know. We have no clue. And we don't even know, frankly, if it will reduce gas prices. But then he points to, California has been doing this with Quebec and, you know, their rates have been great. And so we expect that. What was California's gas prices today again? Oh, yeah, higher than Washington's. $5.43. So, yeah, I mean, I know a lot of that is the gas tax in California, but it's also a result of their carbon auctions that, yes, they've been doing with Quebec, but you still have Californians paying the second highest gas prices in the nation. So if you're trying to tell me that, we're linked with California now, so we're going to do just as good as California, then that's not very good. I mean, it's such nonsense. They absolutely sell a load of BS to people. And I don't know if you spotted this. Do you see who was in the room behind old Bob Ferguson? The climate guru himself, former Governor Jay Inslee, was there. Of course he has to be. He's the architect of the CCA.
Data daddy himself.
Oh, yes. Good OG Dory Monson reference. The data daddy himself, who set all these nonsense climate goals that'll never be achieved, not in his lifetime, not in our lifetime, not in our grandkids' lifetimes, because they're impossible. Who lied about, it'll only cost pennies, or you know what, gas will even be cheaper. who lied through his teeth to basically turn himself into the climate governor with no track record to prove it, run for a presidential bid as the climate candidate to get 1% and fail miserably, and then go on to the private sector and pat his pockets through the climate grift that he created. But of course, Bob Ferguson felt compelled to give him a shout out for all his great work.
I do think I saw it over my shoulder hiding in the back. My predecessor, Governor Jay Inslee, please give Governor Inslee a round of applause. Governor Inslee and his administration, of course, and many individuals of his administration. He's been I've said it many times, I travel the state of Washington, you know, his leadership on issues related to climate are significant.
Significantly bad. I don't blame Bob. If I were saying that, I wouldn't be able to come up with an accurate word either. His climate they're significant. Yeah, significantly false, significantly horrible. It's also embarrassing. And at the end of the day, like so many policies passed at Olympia, you're the ones that end up suffering from it. Absolutely outrageous. That segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. All right, we'll save Unbelievable for a little bit later in the show. First, if you're looking to save some money, I mean, with gas prices going up even more tomorrow, reach out to our friends with First Mark Insurance, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com, and just have them take a second look at your insurance. That's really about just getting a second opinion. We call it the First Mark Challenge, and we have so many First Mark Challenge victories. I mean, I would say every call to First Mark is a victory because you're either going to end up saving money, getting better insurance, or they're just going to say, hey, your insurance is great. We're glad we could take a look at it for you, but we don't think you should change a thing. And I think that's a First Mark victory as well and the sign of an honest company. Robin says, finally joined First Mark. I'm saving $100 a month. Yes, $100 a month. Thank you. No, thank you, Robin, for trusting us and taking the First Mark challenge. Carol says, I took the challenge. I learned my current coverage was good and I should stay. True story. This happened. Same thing happened to Daryl. Sign of an honest company. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. They always have your best interest in mind. All right, a little national news. We'll go back to the SCOTUS situation because today was the last day, so they issued just a flurry of rulings. Donald Trump's not too happy. On a 6-3 decision, SCOTUS has upheld birthright citizenship, saying no such. So there's part of this before I read the ruling of it. So it was basically President Trump doesn't want, I think he doesn't like anchor babies, right? So he doesn't like when, you know, the southern border was wide open and people would run across, have a baby, and then that baby all of a sudden becomes an American. And it's like, does that make an awful lot of sense? I don't think it makes an awful lot of sense. However, and I'm just going to say this off the top, and you all can be as mad at me as you want to be, the ruling makes a lot of sense. And I think when you see a ruling like that, I mean, this is a 6-3 conservative court. And I'm just going to say that whenever I see a ruling that transcended ideological lines, where you had some of the conservative justices joining the liberal justices, I think that probably tells you that it's on solid constitutional footing. And the reality is the 14th Amendment is pretty clear that you're a citizen if you're born in the United States. There's a couple narrow exceptions to that. For instance, if you're here and you're a diplomat and you pop out a kid while you're here. No, you're here, you know, at the pleasure of the government of America. You're a diplomat serving a foreign country. And so you kind of have this sovereignty essentially around you where, no, if you have a kid here, your kid isn't a U.S. citizen. Your kid is a citizen of the country that you're here as a diplomat for. But in all other instances, here's what the majority ruled. No such inter-sovereign concerns apply to children born of parents unlawfully or temporarily present in the United States. No foreign sovereign would, quote, have any motive for wishing them outside this nation's authority. Those children are thus subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. They satisfy both elements of the citizenship clause. They are, quote, born in the United States and, quote, subject to the jurisdiction thereof. Under the Constitution, they are citizens at birth. So that is the ruling of the majority. In the dissent, Justice Alito had a pretty scathing dissent. He said, this is one of the most important decisions in the history of the court, and in my judgment, the court has made a serious mistake. As interpreted by the court today, the 14th Amendment confers citizenship on virtually everyone who happens to be born in this country, including the children of birth tourists, women who come here solely for the purpose of giving birth to a child and then promptly returning home. Careful analysis of the text of the 14th Amendment and the process that led to its adoption shows that it does not degrade the concept of United States citizenship in this way. Instead, the 14th Amendment confers citizenship on only those children who at birth owe allegiance solely to this country. So we'll get to more on that in a moment, but President Trump's response was both, anger and humor. He said, the Supreme Court upheld birthright citizenship, which is too bad for our country, but we can easily make it up in Congress through legislation with the support of the president that has now been determined during this process. No long and unwieldy constitutional amendment is necessary. Congress should start today to work on ending expansive and unfair to our country birthright citizenship. He said, I would also like to congratulate President Xi of the great country of China on their massive birthright citizenship win. So he's basically suggesting that the only people who benefit from this ruling are our enemies who want to degrade the United States of America. Now, here's why, and I'll get to the subscriber show poll and get your guys' thoughts on this. I believe I said at the beginning that I wasn't in favor of the president's executive order trying to end birthright citizenship strictly on the basis that it was unconstitutional, and that's what the Supreme Court agrees with. I believe in a plain reading of the Constitution. And I think we have to, otherwise you could confer all these things. It's what Democrats do with the Second Amendment. You know, they say, oh, well, the Second Amendment was never created to have the kind of weapons that are available now. It's like, well, that doesn't say it in the Second Amendment. You look at a plain reading of the Second Amendment, you have a right to bear arms. And so you can't go back and say, well, what did they really mean? And was it muskets or was it an AR-15? So Democrats do this same thing with the Second Amendment that I think the president is doing with the 14th and birthright citizenship. If we want a plain interpretation of the amendments we care about, then we have to have a plain interpretation of the 14th Amendment. And it says born in. It says born in. It doesn't say born in to an American, born in to a citizen, to a lawful permanent resident. No, it just says born in. So if you don't like it, change the Constitution. Just like I tell Democrats, if you think really we need to update the Second Amendment, the Founding Fathers were brilliant, and they put a process in place to do that. It's really difficult, but if Americans want to do it, it can be done. And so I think that's the only path. We shouldn't get down this dangerous path of, like, Democrats trying to chip away at Second Amendment rights on a state-by-state basis, and the president wants Congress to now go in and upend birthright citizenship. But I would also say, as long as our immigration situation is as it is now, I don't know if it matters as much. We don't have people flooding through our southern border by the hundreds of thousands, dropping off anchor babies. And you know what? Crack down through immigration enforcement, and you have a lot of latitude in who you allow into our country. People could say, I'm coming here on a vacation, and you can just look at it and say, no, you're 8 months pregnant, 9 months pregnant, you're coming here to have a baby, access denied. So you can crack down on some of those things that the president is talking about. I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X, consider becoming a subscriber. We would love to have you, and you can participate in some of these polls during the show. I asked, do you agree with the SCOTUS decision upholding birthright citizenship? Your vote, 30% yes, 70% no. Now, before you answer, Daryl, I'm arguing against my own argument because a plain reading of the show poll might mean something different. But what I think there's a difference between supporting birthright citizenship as it exists and supporting the ruling as it was made. But do you agree with the SCOTUS decision upholding birthright citizenship, yay or nay?
Gosh, it's so tough. It is. I am going to say yes.
Yes. Okay.
I will say, of course, it's not a perfect system at all.
No.
For every reason that you just said. And, you know, I feel like the whole anchor baby thing, that is a loophole that people do abuse. Protecting our borders from foreign invaders. If someone comes over illegally, aren't they technically a foreign invader?
You would think so.
Right?
Yes.
So I feel like that's wrong. I mean, freaking, if a diplomat's kid can't get citizenship, mm-hmm. why is it that somebody who illegally comes into our country is able to have their baby have citizenship?
I agree.
So that system is not perfect, but and correct me if I'm wrong, but I know that Justice Clarence Thomas, his whole, because he's a dissent mm-hmm. on this, and his ruling is his like idea behind it is this came from Reconstruction era,
right? It was so the children of slaves,
freed slaves, could be citizens, and he's saying that it's kind of an outdated ruling, but like you said, change the Constitution.
Right. Well, so is like no quartering of. You know, you can't force the quartering of troops. There's a lot of outdated aspects, but that's the same argument that Democrats make on the Second Amendment. It's outdated.
You did quarter troops, though.
I did quarter. I quartered former troops.
Not against your will.
Yes, not against my will.
We were still processing out.
Yeah.
Not against your will.
Let's read some comments. Matt says, the Constitution is not a suicide pact. Well, yeah, but you can't just willy-nilly throw it around. There's a process. Mike Berta says, I voted yes because an executive order is not the right way to change the Constitution. That's a slippery slope. That said, the overhaul situation gets abused and should be overhauled the right way. Desiree says, I have mixed feelings about this, only because I agree that it's protected by the Constitution, but I also think it's been abused exponentially and should at least be amended, if possible, in a way that the abuse can be minimized. Joan said, that just means more people travel here to have babies. We'll have some sort of rule. I think you can institute a rule that says you can't come to the United States on a tourist visa if you're 7 months pregnant or more.
I think that's fair.
You know, that's fair. It's like, okay, because a tourist visa, is it 30 days or is it 60 days or something?
I'm not
so
sure.
So whatever it is, limit it so it doesn't, so you can't, if you're so-and-so pregnant, you can't remain here within the scope of when you'll be giving birth, essentially. And I think that that's totally fair, and you can absolutely do that. A couple more comments. T.E. Erbil on X says, 100% no, this is not what the authors of the 14th Amendment intended. Quite the opposite, in fact. Reagan said, no, this is clearly not what the law was intended to protect. Illegals coming over to take advantage of our loopholes is not just. And I agree with all that. I just feel like you can't pick and choose how you want the Constitution interpreted, depending on whether you use the amendment to your benefit. All right. Can we get to, sorry, I had a little burp there. That was not ladylike. It just happened. I couldn't stop it. I apologize. Can we make this an unbelievable?
Okay.
Let's get to our segment. Unbelievable. So we've been talking a lot about socialism lately and how it's never worked. It's never going to work. But like, look, okay, latest wave of socialism. You got the Mamdanis. You got the Katie Wilson. You got all these people who were just elected in New York. Maybe they got some new ideas. Maybe they've got some brand new socialist ideas that are going to work out great. No, they're doing the same crap that hasn't worked before. Mamdani just put this out. NYC is opening city grocery stores in every borough. And we need the right spaces to make it happen. If you own or know of a site in Brooklyn, Queens, or Staten Island, submit the New York City submit it to the New York City's grocery store portal by June 30th. So that's today. So they're looking for basically people who have locations that the city can rent to open a government-run grocery store, which has literally never worked. Here's what they're looking for. Own a space, know of one. They want 10,000 square feet, ground floor, built, available, so they can run socialist grocery stores. I don't remember what cities it was. It wasn't Kansas City or something. I mean, first of all, we could just look at breadlines. There's a reason, you could look at Cuba. You could look at all these places where there has been socialism or communism. And one of the key sort of things that people show as the failure of it is the limited availability of food, bread lines, you know, government-run grocery stores where you go in and it's absolutely picked clean. There were some cities in the Midwest, I think, that did this, and it was just an epic failure where you'd go in and there would be literally nothing left. And they're not this doesn't change the model at all. Basically what it is, you can go into a city-run grocery store, you can get carrot for 50 cents, and the government will pay $50 for it. It's not cheaper food. It's food subsidized by the taxpayers. You would be much better taking whatever money you're going to spend on these grocery stores, and even if it's taxpayer money, and giving it directly to a food bank. Every dollar is going to go a million times further, because this is just, you're going to lift a few people up, but taxpayers are going to pay exponentially more than the item is worth or the item costs. And the fact that, and this just shows you, they don't have any new ideas. They don't have any new bright ideas that's going to make socialism work. You might put it in a nicer package and put lipstick on a pig and call him Zohran Mamdani. But he's still a socialist. They have communist ideation. And they're going to do all the things that their socialist heroes did, even though every single one of them has been a proven failure. You can't show me one example of a government-run grocery store that is successful. And what I mean by that, you could have, say, oh, this grocery store is doing great. People go in and get cheap food. How much did the food cost? How much did it actually cost the taxpayers? And then at the same time, in cities like Seattle, what do you have them doing? Driving grocery stores out of business. Driving private grocery stores out of business. Through the crime crisis, we've seen a lot of grocery stores close and create food deserts because the crime crisis and the shoplifting issue was just too bad. And they couldn't make any money because they're putting all their freaking, literally everything behind plexiglass. And then you're increasing the minimum wage. You're increasing the B&O. And all these other things that make the grocery stores are very limited profit margins. They got to sell a lot of stuff to be able to make a profit. And the unions come in, they demand all these things, the government, and then they go out of business. And then the city of Seattle steps in and says, well, maybe we'll open a city-run grocery store there. That city-run grocery store is going to have the same problems. You're going to have to pay workers the same wage. You're going to have to pay, you're going to have security. The shoplifting issue is still going to exist. That's going to cut into your bottom line. The difference is they don't care because they're not concerned about profit and losses because it's your money. That's the only difference, is they have an open check, the taxpayer money. So Zohran Mamdani, go ahead. And first of all, if I had a 10,000 square foot ground floor space in one of the boroughs in New York City, I would be on the phone so fast, because you already know a couple things. They're going to overpay for it. They're going to overpay for it. That's what the government does. So what somebody could get in a place like the Bronx for a 10,000 square foot ground floor unit from a private lessee is going to be way less than what they get from the government. So you already know there are going to be people be like, absolutely, the government, I'll give you a 20-year lease on this. Or the government will just straight up buy it for probably 10 times more than it's worth. It's absolutely unbelievable. So Mamdani, new socialist, same as the old socialist. We'll get to comments from the live stream coming up next. First, if you are trying to make sense of what's happening in the Middle East, the impact that that could have on your retirement portfolio, you don't have to make sense of it yourself. Reach out to our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital. He and his team will give you a second opinion, because you want to make sure, I mean, energy and what's going on impacts all facets of the market: inflation, transportation, manufacturing, global markets. It touches just about everything. So if these oil supply disruptions continue, you have to know whether your current advisor and your portfolio are well prepared to sort of ride out the storm, however long the storm may last. So it's really just about getting a second opinion on one of the most important things that you will do in your life, and that's set yourself up and your family up for retirement and for the future. So get in touch with Zach. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. He'll explain how every market is driven by energy, the impact energy has on inflation, and how that could potentially affect your retirement planning. Plus, he'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is focused on risk management. They're always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, to give your retirement as much upside as possible. So KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. Okay, let's get to comments from the live stream that Miranda has hand-selected. Best of the best. Daryl, it's your last day filling in.
It is.
You've done a great job.
Thank you.
You've done a great job, and it's nice to have a man occasionally weigh in.
Yeah.
We'll allow it for a short period of time.
Oh, yeah.
Some testosterone around.
It's good to
maybe
have.
When Nicole gets back, I'll start taking testosterone injections, just so we don't lose the sort of male
okay.
element of the show. How do you feel about that?
I mean, I thought you were going to have Nicole start taking the
test.
No.
I couldn't ask that.
You could stay at your baseline and then...
No, I mean, I already have this hair on my chin that grows like 3 inches a week. So I feel like maybe I've got too much testosterone.
Okay.
So I might as well just add to it. All right. On the win for girls sports, Diana Manning says, now the WIAA can grow a spine and tell Reichdahl to shove it because the Supreme Court does reinforce the right to ban boys from girls sports. Yeah, I mean, that's part of it, is they can say, no, this isn't against Title IX. That is a good point that I said this doesn't really impact our state. It kind of does, because what SCOTUS is saying is, no, this doesn't, it doesn't go against Title IX, because Biden kind of reinterpreted Title IX to include gender protections. Mm-hmm. And the Supreme Court's like, nah. So yeah, that's a really good point. I hadn't thought of that, Diana. That's why I have you guys here, to fill in the missing pieces from my commentary.
Yeah. Let's go to Matthew Cook here.
Okay.
Same topic. Does CNN do sympathetic stories about girls forced to compete against boys?
No.
Not at all. About the girl volleyball player in North Carolina who got a head injury from being spiked by a boy.
Yeah, I guarantee no. CNN didn't do anything. Or if they did, they probably called her a bigot.
Oh, probably.
Sharon Barber, the day the coaches load up an all trans girls on a girls team, this will end. Yeah, I mean, it takes like LeBron James needs to say, I'm playing in the WNBA today.
LeBron James. That's how I say his name.
I don't think I'd be able to say it that way.
No, you can't as a meme. I'm pretty sure the white kid who said it.
Okay, I'm not going to, but if he says I'm playing the WNBA today, done.
Yeah.
Done. I mean, Serena Williams is on camera saying how ridiculous it would be to have to play against boys, and nobody ever like calls her a bigot.
No.
Just wild. All right, on the violent trans gang roaming Seattle parks, looking up for Jesus, say examples need to be made at this point. Right, and it just bothers me. And I don't believe in hate crimes, because I think every crime has an element of hate, in the sense that if you beat this person because you want their money, and you beat this person because of the color of their skin, at the end of the day, you beat the person, and that's a hateful thing to do. So I think hate crime is a little redundant, so to speak. But yeah, I mean, if this were the other way around, it doesn't make sense to me.
No.
I mean, it doesn't. Why is it okay for this group of people to do it and it's a misdemeanor, but if this group of people does the exact same thing, it becomes a felony?
Yeah.
I don't like it.
The amount of self-restraint Ari had.
Yes. In not pulling his gun?
That's crazy.
I know, but I mean, I think wouldn't also... Be
able to, I don't know.
But,
I don't know.
You know, he was outnumbered.
Yeah.
And people always say this whenever I'm mobbed by Antifa and I've got my security with me. They're like, why didn't your security shoot? It's like, you do realize we're outnumbered like 1 to 100.
That's so true.
We don't even have enough bullets to shoot all these people.
Yeah.
And so it's this element of like, what is going to happen if I introduce a gun into this situation? So I'm not going to second guess his decision on that. All right. Do you want to get us to John Jacobson?
Yeah. John Jacobson. It's possible for the moron mob. Wait a minute. It's possible for the moron mob cannot even read the red hat.
Yeah, it's possible. They didn't even know what it said. It just looks like a red hat.
Yeah, no, it's true. Red hat with white letters.
But that's kind of the point of it. It was to trigger people from a distance. Then you get up and read it and you're like, oh, what is common sense?
People
you know?
Are damn crazy, Brandy.
Literally crazy. Doug Troyer, it was felony assault. The people all doing it should be charged and booked. I agree. Mm-hmm. I just think that they scattered like the little rodents they are.
Yeah. Steve said, that's assault with a deadly weapon by a member of a terrorist organization should be treated as such.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what the charges are against the clearly known Antifa guy who posts about wanting dead cops and used a bat right by the police to beat two people.
To be so bold.
Right.
It's just they don't care.
The feds need to get involved in that case because I think they'll be able to do more. On the state, gas tax increasing tomorrow. Patty says, and if the government cared about us, they could have paused the CCA tax on gas, but they voted no. There's a million things they could have done. And I've already said it, and I'm not going to be, you know, a broken record. They won't help with gas prices right now because it's the midterms.
Mm-hmm.
And they want there to be maximum pain for people heading into the midterms because that will go against the party that's in power, right? So they're not going to do a pause on the gas tax like other states have done. They're not going to pause the CCA. They want you to hurt as much as possible between now and November, because the layperson will blame it on the party in power. And Trump does share part of the culpability for the gas prices. Yep. But in Washington state, they're always high. And now they're just more high than usual. And there's a lot of people, a lot of blame to go around for that. So
We got Stacy here. Yeah. Notice how everyone backed away from the question.
Yeah, it's like the obvious question. They laughed about it, but they're all like, I don't want to take that. The governor, I'm not going to take that question. Yeah. It's like, oh my gosh.
Let me give you a non-answer.
Star Dante says, the climate grift is over, yet they still go on with it. Wait until the data centers fry the environment for real. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, we got SCOTUS upholds birthright citizenship. Mr. Hamlet says, the 14th says parents have to be under the full jurisdiction of the U.S., which illegals are not. The authors of the 14th made that clear.
I'd have to go back and read it, but I thought it was the person getting citizenship had to be subject to the jurisdiction therein. And there is a reality that even if you're here illegally, you are subject to the jurisdiction therein, because if you're here and you're illegal and you commit a crime, Police can arrest you. You can be prosecuted. You're subject to the jurisdiction and to the laws of this country. So I don't know if I agree with that interpretation, but I'll have to go back and read it. Ella West says that needs to be changed. What a ridiculous exploit. Even if the amendment is solid, it's obviously outdated. Yeah. But again, they could use that against you, too, for the Second Amendment. Pew, pew.
Speaking of, you know, it's we love the Second Amendment, first of all. And I mean, like how you said, you know, were they talking about a musket, you know, how technology evolves. But I mean, for the First Amendment, there weren't tweets.
Right. Yes. You know,
there weren't blogs.
Everything. That's why they're so vague. That's why they didn't say in there, you know, First Amendment for written speech in a newspaper. Because they were smart. They knew they couldn't possibly imagine what the country would become.
Yeah.
And that's also why they have a path by which you can amend the Constitution. Right. Because they knew they probably didn't think of everything.
No.
The country would change. The times would change and all of these things. So, yeah, you can use the same argument that, frankly, some of you are using against the 14th Amendment, against all the other freaking amendments that you might really, really care about.
Dangerous.
So we've got a slippery slope to try to go in and splice things and dice things. Yeah. And
it's not perfect.
Not perfect.
But
it's the country we have. God damn, this country's beautiful. We have.
God bless America.
God bless. Oh, beautiful for spacious skies. You don't want to be on camera while I sing. For amber waves of grain. That's not really how I sing, Daryl. I just, you know, I'm embarrassed to really give it my all on the show.
What's your karaoke song?
Oh, A Fortunate Son.
Oh, yeah.
By CCR.
I think I've heard that.
Love that song.
I think I've heard you do that one.
All right. We'll get to our sanity check in a moment. First, Daryl's like, this fill-in gig could not end soon enough. No, we've really appreciated you to be on the show, Daryl. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. They got your back when it comes to trying to help you navigate as a landlord all the different policies that vary by city, county, and the state level. And then they're advocating for private property rights all the time, whether it's in a court of law or down in Olympia to our lawmakers who think landlords are the enemy. For some bizarre reason, rhawa.org, rhawa.org, Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. I just love this. So I ranted about Washington State's booth at the Great American State Fair and how it was just sad and depressing because our state wouldn't go because Donald Trump's bad, although now they're claiming it was a budgetary reason. And it's like, no, it's not a budgetary reason because a lot of states are being represented by private parties, private enterprise, you know, chambers of commerce. You could have found a million people who would go and man the booth, but you didn't want to because you don't like Donald Trump. So one of the other states that didn't go was Pennsylvania. And the two senators from Pennsylvania, one Republican, one Democrat, they said, that's not cool. Pennsylvania's story is critical to America's founding and to our 250th birthday. So look at this. Look at the booth now in the Pennsylvania booth. Oh, isn't that awesome? It went from empty to being filled with all, they got the bell with all this Americana memorabilia, sporting stuff. And they did that freaking overnight. Doesn't that look great? That's what it's all about. And that's not a political booth. It was put together by the offices of both the senators, one Democrat, one Republican, and then some of the companies from Pennsylvania that make it what it is. Some of the, again, like chambers of commerce and stuff like that. They went in, they did that overnight. And I love it. And it looks so cool. And that's just such a good reflection of, look, not everything has to be political. Not everything has to be red versus blue. Sometimes things can just be about loving our country, being patriotic, and celebrating this experiment that we're all on together. And that really is what America is. 250 years later, it continues to be an experiment. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. A quick round of applause for Daryl's marathon fill-in. Had to step away from your newborn baby to be here. We ask too much of you. Nicole, though, will be back from her trip, I think, today. Yep. So Nicole will be right back in that seat tomorrow. And we'll see you. And we have a full regular week of shows, even though it's heading into a holiday weekend. So we will see you back here tomorrow at noon.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thanks for being so nice in the comments.
I don't know. I saw some mean comments.
Oh, yeah?
No, I didn't.
Well, that's okay.
I didn't see any mean ones.
Because Miranda already blocked
them. Miranda's like, block them. Can't say anything mean to Daryl. If there's mean comments about Nicole or you, she'll hide them. If they're about me, she's putting that in the show sheet to be read, for sure. All right, see you guys tomorrow.
Bye, y'all.